my name's Claire. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Claire.
And my sobriety date is August 27th, 2001, and I have a sponsor at a home group. And I don't know, is there anybody in their first 90 days here? Okay. So I always open this. I'm sure you've probably heard this before. But so I have a sponsor, a home group, and a sobriety date. And my sponsor is just a woman who has more sober time than me, who brings me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and shares her sober experience with me. And I have a home group, and they're a group of people that I'm accountable to. And I'm known for, like, liking to kind of fly under the radar, so it's really good for me to have people who I can be accountable to. And my sobriety date is the first day I got sober. And when I first came to AA, people used a lot of terms that I didn't understand what they were talking about. And so I try sometimes to remember when I'm speaking to clarify some things a little bit. And those three things are really, really important for my sobriety. And I don't think I would be sober today without having that foundation. So I always just like to open that up. But so I guess I'll just jump into it. I grew up in D.C. I came from a loving family. We weren't perfect at all, but there was certainly enough love to go around. And if love could make me good and fix me, then it totally would have done it if it could have. Because I had a lot of people who cared a lot about me and really just had my best interest at hand and were constantly trying to help me. And, you know, there are certainly people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous and that's not their story. But for me, you know, I there was nothing from the, there were no circumstantial things in my life that, like, would explain why I felt the way I did, like, from the get-go. When I was a kid, when I was three, my parents brought me to a psychiatrist because I was having anxiety issues, which is, like, I don't know what a three-year-old, I don't even know how a three-year-old shows that they're anxious, like, but I was really, I just, like, I mean, they got me a rocking chair, and I remember I used to go to therapy, and when I was a little kid, and I don't even remember much. All I remember is they had a really great dollhouse, and I used to play with that. But, like, there was no explanation for me being the way I was. I just was uncomfortable. And you know, when elementary school started, I didn't have a hard time making friends. I was social. That's not something I've struggled with, is, like, you know, making friends superficially. But I didn't really ever feel a connection to people from, like, a young age. I wasn't, like, connecting to people in, like, a healthy, happy way. I just remember constantly having this, like, insecurity and competitiveness going and feeling like I had to, like, bow down to people to make them like me. I mean, it's so funny, but I would, like, let everybody get in the line before me. Like, I'd be in line, I'd be like, oh, you can go in front of me. You know, just like this, it's not that that makes me alcoholic. I just had this, like, stuff on the inside that I just couldn't deal with life on life's terms. You know, like, from the beginning, I felt like I needed something to help me, you know. And once again, that's not everybody's experience, but that's how it was for me. And and so the first time I got drunk, I was, like, I think, like, 12 or 13, and I was hanging out with these girls who I thought were, like, way cooler than me. I was just lucky to be in their presence. And we were drinking, and I got drunk, and I had no idea how uncomfortable and how neurotic I was until I wasn't. And I just felt, I felt like all the muscles in my body could relax. I could take a deep breath, and everything was fine. I didn't have to constantly analyze what I'm going to say. Like, if I say this, what are they going to think? Are they going to think this? Or are they going to think? Is that the right tone to say it? You know, like, I could just do whatever. And we ended up shaving half of my head and dyeing my hair purple, and it was very exciting. And I felt like equals to people. Like, I didn't have to protect anything, you know? And it was a wonderful feeling, and I didn't immediately start drinking every day after that at all. But it made an impact on me, to say the least. And I was definitely interested in continuing that behavior. At that time, I was just kind of, I guess, in teenage angst or, like, alcoholism without alcohol, which is real insanity. So I was just acting out in all types of ways. I was physically abusive with my family. I was really just a horror of a child. I mean, not I was hard to deal with, to say the least. But so anyway, I tried to buy some drugs on school property, and my parents, well, the school found out, and my parents found out, and I got in all this trouble, and I also got caught for getting drunk. So pretty much my parents just assumed that the only rational explanation for the change in my behavior was, and me being so crazy, was that I must be on drugs. So they sent me away to rehab, and I'd only drank once, and I never actually got my hands on those drugs. So here I am in rehab, and I'm like, I don't even have anything to say, you know? And but nobody would take that, like, nobody believed me. So I just made up stories, and it was very, like, I just made up all these things, and I did, like, I had to pretty much share, like, a four-step type thing with my mother, which was all made up. Like, and I remember, I made it all up, and I remember thinking, like, she was like, oh, that's it? And I was like, that's it. Like, I was kind of expecting her to be, like, horrified or something. But it wasn't, I mean, that was just it. Like, they were just very, like, done, you're gone, you know? And so what I took away from that experience was that not that drugs and alcohol are bad, but I just need to really watch my behavior because my parents aren't kidding. Like, they just are going to send me off in an instant. And so that's what I did. I literally, it was so weird. I came back with, like, an even greater, like, decision that this is what I'm going to do. And I had to leave the school that I was previously at, and I was going to a public school, and probably, like, the first day I met people who were doing what I wanted to do. It was just, like, I knew that that's where I wanted to go, which is interesting because some people are like, you know, I want to be on the lacrosse team or, I want to join some science. Like, but I was like, that's it. You know, like, those punk rock kids, I don't even care who they are. You know, like, whatever, goth, punk rock, whatever the image is, let me just be a part of them because they're having fun. And that's what I want to have. Like, that's who I want to hang out with. And so I pretty much started drinking every day after school. And still, I think about that. And I was like 13 years old and I was doing that. And I can't, it impresses me today. Cause now I'm like, I'm quite a bit older from that now. And it just seems like, wow, that's crazy. And I used to, I don't even know what I told my parents, but somehow, like, I was able to rationalize it. And so I drank after school every day. We'd go to the bums and they'd buy us alcohol, and it was just, that was it. It was lots of fun. And we'd go into the woods. It was not glamorous. I have never had a glamorous drink in my life. I've never had a legal drink in my life. I don't know, but it gave me peace, and that was the only time that I had peace. And all that anxiety and restlessness, and, you know, our book talks about restless, irritable, and discontent, and that was like me to the T. I just was so uncomfortable, and alcohol gave me comfort. And I did a lot of drugs, that's a part of my story, and I liked the effects they produced, but alcohol gave me peace. And that's the only way I can kind of differentiate it, you know? And so what is it that makes me an alcoholic? Because I had some confusion about that when I first got sober because of my story. I thought, well, my story, I've heard some of these speakers who have, like, these crazy alcoholic stories where they drank for longer than I'm currently alive, and they've done all types of things, and so how am I like them? Because I didn't have those things. And what I have found is that there is no denying that when I start drinking, I develop craving, and I didn't understand what that meant. And so kind of how I see it today and how I understand it is, like, sometimes I'll crave a certain food. Like, I'll want, like, I saw those cookies, which were very good, I just have to say. Like, I'll see a cookie, and I'll be like, I want that cookie. And then I eat it, and then I'm good. I'm not going to, like, hoard all the cookies from everybody. I'm not going to, like, steal money so I can get more cookies. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to demoralize myself for cookies. I'm not going to, like, compromise things that have been taught to me for, like, it just doesn't matter to me. Like, I like them, but I'm kind of indifferent, you know? Like, if I was told I couldn't have them, it would be like, well, that sucks, but oh well, you know. But with alcohol, I have that drink, and I'm never satisfied with the amount that I have. I never feel like, whoop, we're good, that's enough. You know, like, I just, I'm insatiable in regards to that. And that is something that happened from the get-go. I was insatiable for, once I started drinking, I just never felt like I had had enough. And other people felt like I had had enough, but, and they would step in, and it's funny because I would think like, you know, I had, I used to move around in groups of friends. Like I would hang out with the stoner friends over here, and then I'd hang out with my like hardcore drug friends here, and then my alcoholic friends over here, and my hippie, like I would just kind of migrate through these groups, because I couldn't really connect to other people. So I was just always floating and, you know, people were like, oh, Claire, she's so cute. We like her. And until I did something and then they were like, we hate her. And I was hanging out. I had this boyfriend who I used to smoke pot with all the time. He had never seen me drink. And we were hanging out one time with this guy who I used to drink with, but then I had stopped drinking with because my drinking was getting a little crazy. So I decided to get this boyfriend who smoked pot. This is my way of managing my life. And so, anyway, we were hanging out with this friend, and my friend was like, Chris, have you ever seen her get drunk? And I have to preface this by, this guy, I really, like, judged. Like, I was like, you are such a loser. I hung out with him, but I was like, you know, he's got real problems. And he was like, you should really, like, she's not good when she drinks. Like, you probably shouldn't let her. And I was sitting there, and I was like, what? You know, and here's somebody who I look down on who was warning my boyfriend that I probably shouldn't be drinking. That's probably not a good idea. And so that was a little interesting moment for me. You know, and then, so just jumping back, so the other part of the first step is, you know, like I have this mental obsession. And the way I see that is like I have a brain that rationalizes drinking. Like, it just makes it seem like a good idea, always. I had the obsession in the sense that I wanted to wallpaper my room with Absolut bottle advertisements. Like, I was collecting them to do that. I would consider that an obsession. But I also had it in the sense of, like, things are good, let's go drink. Things are bad, let's go drink. Oh, okay, we shouldn't drink. That's a bad idea. Okay, so we're going to do this. All right. And so, but we're going to go to this friend's house, but we're not going to drink. It's okay. But you know what? I've never gotten drunk off of that stuff. Like, that's fine. It'll be fine. I won't do, and then I do it, you know, like, and that's what's so scary is that and that's why I need a program, because I was not drunk when I decided to take that drink. Like, my thinking is what the problem is. And that, you know, our book talks about, you know, problems relating to others and kind of having something to do with that. And that was really it. Like, I just felt so, like I just couldn't handle life on life's terms. That's all I can say is, you know, like, and alcohol, you know, so I had this brain that I would get in trouble and I would decide that I should not do this. And then I would drink again, you know, and I had times where I knew that I shouldn't drink. You know, like I had gone to the mental hospital, so I've been in and out of mental hospitals and rehabs and seen all different types of psychiatrists and psychologists and all that. But I had gone out of rehab or the mental hospital, and I was at a different school, and so the school was being kind of like lax on me because they knew I had gone to the mental hospital, and they didn't really have the funds to provide me with like technically what I was supposed to be provided with. So pretty much they just gave me a get out of jail card. Like I could pretty much do anything I wanted. Because I think perhaps that they were afraid that I might kill myself on school property. So so I had this get out of jail card, and so I hadn't been to school in never went to school that year. And I would get on the bus every day, and I would think, you have to go to school. Like I had goals, like I had things I wanted to do, and I understood that, like, I had to do certain things to get those goals, and I would think, you really need to go to school. And I would get on the bus, and we'd go up Wisconsin Avenue, and I'd be like, I got to go to school. You haven't been to school in forever. Like, you really need to go. And then something would happen. I would get off the bus, and instead of walking the two blocks to school, I would walk to the payphone, call my boyfriend. He'd pick me up, and we'd go drink and drug all day. And like, that happened on a regular basis. Like, I didn't have the control to be like, this is the decision I've made, and I'm sticking to it, no questions asked, you know? I can do that with other things, but I can't do that with alcohol. And so anyway, as I said, I had been in and out of these institutions and had all these people try and help me, and I just really wasn't interested in what they had to offer. And it's interesting too, because I'm going into the medical field, and I've taken some classes, and I learned about these different like therapeutic approaches, and I was like, you know, it's funny, because like in AA, there's a lot of those different things, but what is the difference between that and what was given to me? Because I was like, I had that type of therapy, you know, when I was drinking, and here, like, people are sharing stuff from their own experience. Like, they're telling me what worked for them. They're not telling me just what to do, and it carries more weight, you know. It talks about, like, the alcoholic needs a message that carries depth and weight, and it can't, no frothy emotional appeal, and that was, for me, like, these doctors, they were telling me what to do, and actually they were very good suggestions, but it didn't mean anything to me. I just felt like I didn't believe them. And so anyway, I had all these people try to help me, and I wasn't really interested, and I just kind of drove my life into the ground, and I got to the point where I was suffering physically from my lifestyle, and I was getting sick a lot, and to say that I had a lot of demoralizing, I mean, I really just signed myself up for all types of interesting things that I would never want publicized. You know, like, here in AA, I can share those things and know that, like, I can help somebody. But when I was drinking, like, that was stuff I just didn't want people to know. I mean, there were a lot of things that I did with men that I, you know, that I wouldn't want people to know. But then there were other things, like, with my family, you know, like, they love and trusted me, and I would just feed them lies. And I remember one time my mom caught me. I mean, they caught me in it frequently, but like, she caught me, and I just saw like the hurt, and it like really made me sick. Like, the only thing I could do was get drunk, because I just couldn't deal with the fact that like I did that, and I did it. And I was laughing to somebody, you know, like, I was laughing to the way she found out. I was laughing at somebody for her believing my crazy story. And she overheard me because she was listening in on my voice, you know, on my phone call. And I just remember, like, she just was saying, like, how hurt she was. She wasn't even angry. And that's, like, that's the other thing. Like, when I'm drinking, I live in a way that, like, I can only drink to continue living like that. You know, like, I can't, and that was it. It was like this cycle of like, I do something awful and I can't deal with it. And then I drink and then I'm like, whatever. So anyway, I just got to this point where I was just really tired. Like, I think that's just the best way to explain it. I just sum it up. I was just really tired. I was tired of the way I was living. I was just tired of everything, and I have so many lies, I couldn't keep track of them. I mean, I remember somebody called me a compulsive liar, and I was so offended, but I was totally a compulsive liar. I would just tell you anything, and so I ended up having to go back to this rehab, and my parents sent me back again, and I wasn't planning on being honest or doing anything differently. I was planning on playing the same game that I always played, which is like, you know, tell you what I think you want me to say, and then, but not really do anything you want me to, and then just leave and then continue to do what I was doing before. And, you know, I used to think that, like, I was really pulling a fast one over, like, all these doctors and therapists and rehab workers, but now I'm wondering if they probably were just like, well, here she is again, like, in and out, you know, like, so I don't know how, you know, smart I actually was, but because this is just also my version of it, so who knows what it really was like, you know. But anyway, so I got sent back to this rehab, and I was thinking the whole time, just, well, I was in withdrawal, which was pleasant because I was on this plane going out and, like, just sick as anything. It was awful. And I got there, and I don't know what came over me, but the truth flew out of my mouth. And, like, I really think that was God, because I don't know why I would tell them that. Because, and, like, I actually told them the truth about everything, which I don't, I can't, at that time, it just made no sense for me to say that. But I did. And, you know, I think I didn't stay sober after that, but I think, you know, being there gave me, like, some distance from where I was. And I started to think that, like, maybe things could be different. And, like, I didn't, because that part of me had just kind of surrendered to the fact that my life was going to stink. And I had friends that were, like, you know, further down the path than me, and they were not doing hot. And I just I knew that that was just going to be the same for me, but it wasn't like a fight, it wasn't like a self-pity or like anything, it was just kind of like, well, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. But I was there, and I decided, like, I really wanted to do everything different, and I did all these, like, worksheets and filled out all these packets and came up with relapse prevention plan and, like, actually really did everything that they suggested, and then I left with all intentions of staying sober, like, more than anything before. And but I didn't have a we, you know, like, in the first step it says, we admit we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. And it was just me on my own trying to stay sober with this packet of information that I was given. And I didn't. I stayed sober for a little bit, like 2 weeks or so. And I was on a family vacation, and I got pissed off, and I don't even remember what I was pissed off about, but I decided to go for a walk, like they had taught me, to take myself out of the situation, and, like, I'm trying to do what they told me to do. And I go for a walk, and I am walking, and I don't know about you guys, but I have this amazing sixth sense for locating other people who like to party like me. And I came across these people, and they weren't even doing anything. They were just sitting around, and I asked them if they had anything, and they said yes. And I said, well, can I have some? And they said, sure. And so I got drunk and high, and nowhere in my mind did I think, Claire, you were just at rehab. You just decided that this is, you want to do things differently. This is like, you were so dead set. These are all the consequences. You were just looking at all these demoralizing things you had done. Like, remember, you know? And I had that, like, mental blank spot. Like, and that's what's so scary, is that I do things that aren't in my best interest, that I know aren't in my best interest, but I do them because it's like something comes over, I forget, you know? My instincts kick in, and I have no power. I'm completely powerless. And I got drunk and high, and I didn't intend to. And I got home from that vacation, and I had been to AA before. I had checked it out. I wasn't, like, actually interested in coming to AA, but I just had been here. And I would not say that I was, like, I literally just checked it out. Like, I went to a couple meetings and was like, this is nice for you guys. You know, my impression of AA was, people were nice, and I liked their stories, and I related to them. I thought they were really weird, but, you know, like, there was the attraction there. And actually, a bunch of women gave me their phone numbers, and I kept them. I never threw them away. I never called them, but I always held on to them. And so I actually called this girl who I used to drink with, who had gotten sober, and I asked her, well, actually, first I called this one girl who I believe spoke here, like, a couple weeks ago, Alice. Alice and I used to drink together. When I knew Alice before she got sober, she was, like dressed all in black, combat boots, and yelled. She didn't talk. Her way of communicating was, like, yelling. And so I called her first, but her voicemail was like, hi, this is Alice. I'm not here right now. Please leave a message. And I was like, I must have the wrong number. Like, so I didn't leave a message, and I called this other girl. And so AA was working in her life. But so I called this other girl, and she picked me up, and she brought me to a meeting, and then I was in AA. It was like, they told me I had impulse control problems, like, my entire life, which I do, but But that was like impulse control working to my benefit because I did not think about like, oh, I'm going to join AA or anything like that. I was just like, I'm just going to call her and I don't know what's going to happen. So then I was going to these AA meetings and I then got a sponsor and then these people told me that this was my service position and I was like, what is service? And they were like, you have to be at this meeting choir, and I was like, are there AA songs? Like, what is this? There aren't. They were like, but you need to stand by the door and shake everyone's hand. And I was like, okay. And here I was in AA. And I was really lucky. I fell into a group where there was really a lot of fellowship and people were really, you know, excited about being sober and doing stuff. And that was really great for me. I'm glad that I fell in there. However, I understood that when I drank, problems happened. I did not think I was an alcoholic. Therefore, I had none of the other steps. And therefore, I had no solution in my life. And the problem with me is that if I I'm not drinking, and I don't have AA, I slowly go insane, and that's what happened. And my first 3 years sober, I went insane, and I finally pretty much had a full breakdown, because the thing is I wasn't living sober. Like, I was kind of doing the things that people wanted me to do and saying the things and sharing in meetings, and I had all these outside things that I heard people saying that you should have, and I quickly caught on, you know, I'm a status seeker. I want everybody to like me. I want to be, like, cool. Like, I want to be in the cool crowd, not just, like, average, but, like, the cool crowd, you know. And so I was like, well, if I want to do that, I have to be Miss AA and do all these things, you know. So I was doing all these things, and I don't think that that was for nothing. I mean, I'm grateful that I did that. I have a lot of, you know, like, I'm not discrediting that, but I didn't really have any type of solution, and I can only ride on that for so long. And the problem is that since I wasn't, I didn't really think I was an alcoholic, I didn't really think I needed any other help, you know, like the steps or anything. So I wasn't really going to turn it over to anything, and I wasn't going to really do this honest fourth and fifth step because why would you want to do that? And so then I'm not going, that means if I'm not really looking at these things, that means I'm not really changing anything. And if I'm not really changing anything, I can't really make amends for anything. And if I'm like, there's just this whole chain of events of nothing. I was doing nothing. And I was kind of like doing outside stuff, but nothing really. And so I was acting out really badly in AA. And I have pretty much done everything I did drinking sober. I have demoralized myself numerous times. I have lied. I have cheated. I have gone against things that I know were wrong. I mean, my parents raised me with morals. I do know the difference between right and wrong. And I have chosen wrong many times in AA. And I am not a proponent for, like, living like that. But that's my experience. And so what happened is when I'm living like that, I can't stand the way I feel. And I was having meltdowns. And I remember I had this girl in my car who had a week sober who was telling me that it was going to be okay. Like, and I had, like, 2 years sober. And I was like, no, it's not. And she was like, it'll get better. It just keeps coming back. I remember it, which I'm like, God, that was so crazy. And I couldn't stay in my own house because I was afraid I was going to hurt myself, so I had to, like, spend the night at other people's houses all the time. Like, this is crazy. I was so crazy. And then finally something broke. And I was at my parents' house, and I was walking up the steps. So I decided I was going to leave AA because AA was the problem. That was the problem. And so I left AA for, like, 3 days. And but what happened is I was at my parents' house, and I, like, had this revelation that, like, I couldn't fix me. Like, I had tried it, and I couldn't do it. And at that time, I did understand that I was an alcoholic, but I didn't have that second part. Like, I had we were powerless over alcohol, but our lives had become unmanageable. I didn't get that at that point. And then it occurred to me that, like, I, for those previous 3 years, I really had been trying. I mean, though I hadn't done the steps, I had been trying to the best of my ability to be a good person and to, like, do everything I was supposed to do. And I couldn't, like, you know, it talks about, like, moral and philosophical convictions galore. Like, I had all these, like, things that I was trying to do, and I could not do it. Like, I couldn't be happy on my, like, I just couldn't. I tried really hard, and I couldn't. And it dawned on me that my boyfriend couldn't fix me, and my parents couldn't fix me, and my doctors, they tried, and that didn't fix me, and I had tried all these various medications and all these things, and none of that fixed me. And, like, the only thing I had was AA, and it was, like, this kind of depressing, but, like, it was just, like, that's it. Like, I don't have any other options. Like, I really tried other options. I tried them drinking, and I tried them dry, and I could, this was it. Like, I had no other options. Like, I didn't do this stuff just because, you know, some people do. They have different experience, you know, don't have to do it my way. But, like, I did it because, like, there was literally nothing else I could do. I was like, I'm going to kill myself or, like, do these steps. Like, this is, so things started changing after that point for me. Like, something broke. I had been so stubborn and so set on things, and something finally broke inside of me. And I see other people, you know, with less time. I mean, some of them with, like, months or weeks. Like, there's something broke. They have given up the fight, you know. And I finally, like, gave up the fight. And because I finally was like, I can't. I mean, and, you know, for a second, for a higher power, like, I believed, like, AA could help me. And that was the extent. Like, God was kind of not. But, like, AA was a power greater than me. And when it talks about a power greater than me and, like, how I understand that today, at a very basic level, if I can't, like, lift a piece of furniture and I get somebody else to help me, that is in and of itself a power bigger than me, because what I can't do on my own, with somebody else, we can do it. And so, coming here, it was like, what I can't do on my own, which is stay sober and be, like, happy and not try to kill myself, like, if I do it with you guys, maybe it'll work. And then I had this willingness, like I had not had before, to do the things that I had been unwilling to do before. And I wrote an honest fourth step with all this stuff that I had done sober. Like, there was no, you know, all that bad behavior, there was no, like, oh, alcohol, I was drunk, it's not my fault. You know, like, it was like, no, I did all of those things. And I will continue to keep doing all those things over and over again if I don't change. And I, you know, I think people make a big deal out of the fourth and fifth step, and I think the only big deal is if you don't do it. Because I've heard fourth steps, and people have told me things, and seriously, I've heard, like, I mean, I know that they're crazy, but I'm like, well, yeah, okay, here you are. You know, like, and nothing really surprises me, and I think my sponsor would probably agree, like, not, there isn't too much that's kind of like, oh, wow, well, you know, because we're just broken people, and so I did that honest fourth step, and it literally felt like bricks had been lifted off my chest. And I did feel that promise of, like, I felt like I could look the world in the eye, because I had felt like I couldn't. I was looking at the ground all the time. I was so insecure. I mean, it was not a pleasant way to live. And so when I finally see, like, the causes and conditions of why I act the way I act by looking at my fourth step, then I have the ability with, you know, and sharing it with my sponsor and getting some perspective, I have the ability to, like, start doing things differently, which is 6 and 7. And I think, you know, in the big book, 6 and 7 are like a paragraph, but, like, they're a really big deal in my experience. I think they're really, really important, and they're not just a paragraph. You know, like, it's not just a blip on the radar and then you go to 8 and 9, because I need to, like, change. And it's not that I can change myself and be like, Claire, stop being like this, poof, and then I'm like that. I can't, me of myself, if I could do that, why would I be here? I mean, for real, like, I wouldn't be here. Because I would just decide, well, that's a bad behavior and I'm going to stop it and now we're done. But that's not how it works for me. For me, 6 and 7 is like trying to pray and ask God for help and continue to look at my inventory and continue to share that with somebody else and have the humility to be like, I did it again. I know. I mean, I just had a conversation with my sponsor before we walked in here of, like, I keep having this problem where I do this one behavior and then and then I know it's wrong, so then I stop and I make amends for it, and then I do it again, and then it's just this cycle, and I'd really like to stop doing it, but, you know, but I need to keep being honest about it and, like, have that humility of, like, you know what, I'm sick. This is not about being perfect. This isn't about, like, achieving some, like, great AA status. This is about me, like, growing as a person and being able to be comfortable in my own skin. And so that doesn't happen overnight. And different people have different experiences with the steps, and that's, you know, like, this is really just my experience and just, like, how I see it. But for me, like, I didn't do my eighth step for a while because, you know, what my sponsor said is, like, an amends is a change, and I need to be changed. There were some things that it was like, well, you can start doing that now. You know, like, but a lot of, like, the direct amends with my family, like, I did not, like, after that, you know, 3 years, I didn't go to them and be like, okay, so this is what I did wrong, and now I'm different, because I wasn't different. Like, there was so much that had to change, and it took a while for me to show up differently in people's lives. But after a while, I was. And then I could go to those people and say, like, what I did was wrong, and, you know, you have every right to be upset at me, and you did not deserve that, but I'm a different person now, and what can I do to make it right? Like, and I knew, it wasn't like, you know, there's this one part in the book, I like it, where it talks about in the big book where it says, like, you know, we tried to enjoy a reputation that we knew in our hearts we didn't deserve. You know, like, that was, like, my theme song. Like, I always was trying to, like, portray this image that I knew wasn't really true, you know? And it's really nice when you can go to people and be like, it is true. Like, I'm not like that. I don't treat people like that anymore. Like, I know, with my family, like, I know I've treated you like this, but I don't do that anymore. And when I made amends to my family members, it was kind of like almost not a big deal, you know, like, because the amends had already been made. It was kind of a formality, you know, like, I mean, my sister, somebody who I've struggled with, I mean, we're so similar, it's hard sometimes, but when I made amends to her, she was like, and she's somebody I had, like, a couple years sober, and I called her a $3 whore, and, like, so that's, like, how we were, like, that's how we communicated. Like, we were just really nice to each other, and I remember, like, talking to my sponsor and being like, actually, I had more than a couple years sober. I think I had, like, 5 years sober. So, like, you know, like, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but the truth is, like, so that's where we were, and now, like, she was, like, no big deal. Like, we were both harsh on each other. Like, I love you. You're a great sister. And, like, that is kind of a really big deal because, like, our whole lives we didn't get along. And now it's like, you know, things aren't perfect. We don't have, like, a perfect relationship, you know. Or I don't know. I think it's a good relationship. Maybe it's not, like, the Brady Bunch, but you know, like, I can talk to her and, like, I care about her. And with my other siblings, you know, some of them may or may not be suffering from this, but, like, I can meet them where they're at and, like, I love them and I'm happy with the way things are. Sometimes I get insecure and sometimes I compare myself to other people or other relationships and I kind of wish it was different, but when I think about it, like, they know I love them and they know that I'm sober and they know that I'm a safe person, and that's, like, really all I could ever ask. And so having, like, made those direct amends, then I have, like, you know, the 10th step, which I really, like, when I'm sponsoring somebody, I suggest that they read the 6th step, 7th step, and then the 10th step, and the 12 and 12, like, before I have them do inventories, because I really think it's, like, it's all about change. It's not about beating ourselves up. And when I first had experience with the 10th step, I did not understand the principle of it. So it was just, like, let's make a list of all the ways Claire is a terrible person and, like, vomit that on my sponsor. You know what I mean? And that's not about it. It's about, like, change and how can I be the person that I think God wants me, you know, like, that God wants me to be. And I think God wants me to be happy and kind to other people and act by principle and have integrity. And so how am I compromising those things for, like, some type of, you know, instinct, you know? And so that's something I need to keep looking at. And, you know, things come to us when we're ready for them. And I've done many inventory. Like, I recently kind of just did something little where, you know, it's like, I see with new eyes some things that have happened, and I need to look at them, and I have to address them, because if I don't if I try and push stuff aside and I try and ignore it and I try, it comes out sideways. And I have to keep growing or else I'm going to drink. And I might, you know, like, I just celebrated 10 years, which is great. That's great. But it's just, I just have today. And if I'm resting on my laurels and if I'm not doing what I was taught here, it doesn't matter. Like, that's great. I have these wonderful experiences, but, like, I need to keep doing this because if I don't deal with my alcoholism, then I'm going to be restless, irritable, and discontent. And I know the number one thing that makes me feel better, you know? And I need to develop a power, like a relationship with a power greater than myself. And I think it's very personal. And, you know, for people I sponsor, I'm like, you don't have to, like, sit and meditate and, like, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. It's like, what can you do that makes you feel like, in connection with something bigger than you, you know, like how, what practice can I utilize so I can like connect with other people better, you know? And for me, like I pray and I, you know, try and like have peace and like see the beauty in things. Like that's how and have gratitude lists. Like, I kind of struggle with road rage. So I've done this thing where I drive to school and I like pray for everybody. I mean, I can't pray for everybody, but, like, I pray for, like, people close to me, and then it's worked out very well. And then I kind of do, like, a gratitude list in my head, and, like, and then I always end up crossing this bridge at the same time, and it's, like, a really beautiful sight, and, like, there's this river, and it's just really pretty. And it's not something I probably would have noticed before, but, like, I try and look at that and just kind of enjoy it, and you know, and then I pray throughout my day when I'm struggling with things or just in general to help me to preemptively so I don't struggle with things, you know. And it helps me. Like, I have found in my experience that prayer is real and it really does help me get through things that I on my own can't get through. Like, I remember the first time I, with my sister, that she made a nasty comment to me and I didn't say anything, which was like, I never didn't say anything. Like, I was not going to, like, I'm older than she is. I don't know who she thinks she is. I got to put her in her place. Like, she will not have the last word. So, and I remember I just had a conversation with my sponsor and she was like, do you want a relationship with your sister? Do you want to be right? And I was like, I want to be right. Like, I don't, this isn't even something I'm really, but I said that. And then what happens with my sponsor, she says something to me and I'm like, no. And then like, I think about it, and then, like, a couple hours later, like, a couple days later, I'm like, okay, fine, you're right, you know? And so I was in that, like, place of, like, oh, damn, you know? And my sister said something nasty, and I didn't say anything. I was praying, and I didn't say anything back. And that was, like, not me. And I've been able to walk through fears that are not, like, I've been able to live my life, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but, like, for me, you know, like, I'm in school right now for something I really am excited about doing. I would not have put in the application without prayer because I know that sounds kind of silly, but, like, I would just be too afraid to do it, and I would have all these reasons for why it's not going to work out, and why would I do it anyway? Like, it's true. Like, I get in the way of my own life, and prayer lets me kind of walk through things that I'm scared to do on my own because I'm not on my own. Like, if I can remember, like, it's not like I'm doing this by myself. Like, I have, you know, and sometimes I need to remember for, you know, my higher power, my prayers, like, I have people in AA. I'm not by myself. It's not like it's me against the world, you know, and it felt like that when I was drinking. And so, you know, with the 12-step, you know, practicing these principles in all of our affairs and passing this on, you know, like, I need to, it's funny, my boyfriend is an alcoholic, but he can tell when I've talked to somebody, well, when I've talked to most people I sponsor, there are a couple who sometimes I get a little, like, agitated after I get off the phone with them, but when I've talked to most people I sponsor, like, there's a change in attitude. Like, I'm just kind of lighter, you know? I need to pass this on. Like, it really does, caring about other people, like, is really nice, and I, you know, I don't think you need to sponsor somebody to pass this on at all. That was something I really struggled with, because I didn't really, like, sponsor people for quite a few years, and I felt really insecure about it, and I felt like I'm a bad AA and all this, And I don't think that's where it's at. You know, my sponsor says, like, sponsorship is what we do. It's not what we're called. So, like, am I trying to, like, be of service to people? Like, am I trying to reach out my hand and just maybe I don't have to be the big sponsor, but am I the person who remembers their name, like, and, you know, tries to make them feel comfortable? You know, I've answered phones at Intergroup before, and I have, you know, tried to bring meetings to institutions. And, you know, with some of those institutions, I mean, most of those people are so doped up on drugs. I wonder if they even hear me. But in my experience, like, I didn't get sober right after I was exposed to AA, but I knew it was here. And so if all I do is let them know that we're here and that we're nice, then I've done my job. Like, there have been, like, two people I've been bringing meetings to institutions for years and years and years. There have been, like, two people who've actually, like, stayed sober and, they aren't even sober anymore, but they, you know, stay sober for a little bit. So I don't even expect that. But, like, doing stuff like that and having service and trying to create an atmosphere, you know, like, am I living by principle? Am I trying to create, like, an atmosphere where people feel safe and welcomed? Or am I participating in gossip and, like, kind of tearing the unity apart, you know? Like, and that, like, all ties in, I think, to, you know, practicing these principles in all my affairs. Because my other experience is, you know, like, I can act really nice in AA and, like, be Miss, you know, AA, but then I go out into the real world and I'm just, like, screaming at other people on the road and, like, cheating on tests and yelling at my parents and my boy, you know, like, being nasty to my boyfriend and nasty to my coworker. Like, I need to, like, I have learned how to live in AA. Like, AA taught me how to live, and I need to bring that out into the world. And I'm very grateful because I've been able to do a lot of really cool things in my life. But it's because I've learned stuff from you guys. Like, you guys taught me how to show up and to put my hand up and how to offer, you know, to be helpful. You know, like, I wouldn't, you know, for school, you taught me to, like, I had to, like, sit in the front of the meeting because that's how I learned to, like, pay attention. Because I would have been, like, in the back, but my sponsor was like, no, you're sitting up here and you're watching their lips, you know, because I would just, like, zone out and count the tiles on the ceiling or the tiles on the floor. Like, you guys showed me how to do that. And it's, I need to bring that out into other places. And, you know, I think, I said before, like, my brother and sister, like, they know, and they very well may not be alcoholic. They very well may not. But my family and my boyfriend and my boyfriend's family and all the people who have met me, I feel safe to, you know, well, not all the people, but, like, since I got a program, all the people that met me, like, I feel like they have a good view of AA, and they know that it's helpful. And they don't think, like, oh, that crazy Claire, you know, like, they know that, like, this is something that helps. And maybe they don't need it. That's fine. Like, they don't, you know, like I said, my boyfriend is, like, the most normal person. Like, sometimes I'm just like, how do you, like, it has taken me years to learn how to take my inventory. Like, how do you just do it, like, on your own? Like, I don't understand that, you know, like, I'll have had, like, three conversations with my sponsor about how to talk about this, and then I talk it to him, and then he's, like, just says all this stuff. I'm like, God, how do you do that? You know, like, so he doesn't need this, so, like, you know, maybe they know that it's here and it's working, so if they know somebody who might need it, like, they know it's a good place. You know, like, when I first came to AA, my mom was very comfortable with me being mentally sick, but she was not okay with me being an alcoholic. Like, that, and you know what? Like, she did not like AA. She did not like the fact that I listened to my sponsor instead of her, and I, you know, like, and I didn't always handle that very well either, just, you know. But she thinks the world of you guys, and my family, like, they think, and it's you guys, like, it's not me, and so, I don't know, I'm very grateful for what this program has given me, because I have a wonderful life, and I need to remember that, because it's really easy for me to get wrapped up in, like, all the things I want, and how I'm not getting it right now, and I don't like waiting, God damn it, you know, like, it's really easy for me to get into that, and to not see how lucky I am, you know, and I'm a real alcoholic, and, you know, I have to say, like, so I had this, my sponsor told me to write this inventory, and she told me, like, 2 weeks ago maybe, and I was like, hey, I gotta do that, and then I didn't do it, and then I had, like, two drinking dreams, and they were really awful, like, they were the ones where, you, like, you wake up, and you're like, God, like, I feel so bad. I didn't actually do it, but, like, I feel terrible, you know? And I finally, like, sat down and wrote the inventory. And so, like, but I'm grateful for those dreams because nothing human is alien to me. And that's something my sponsor told me, too. Like, they're, I don't even know what I'm capable of. And that's what's so scary. Like, if I went out and drank, I don't even know what I would or I wouldn't do because I could really do anything. And that's what, that is really terrifying to me. And I have a really good life. So I have you guys to thank. And thank you so much for asking me. And I was able to speak for as long as you wanted me to. So thank you.